third case of the morning call, which is the United States versus Smith and Wheaton, appeal number 08-3374.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Erica Birma, and I'm appearing on behalf of Carrie Wheaton in this matter. The sentence in this case is procedurally unreasonable due to the district court's inadequate consideration of the 3553A factors in this case. The facts of this case are very, very serious, and I readily acknowledge that they are, but the 3553A factors have to apply equally regardless of what the facts of the offense are. And all the factors under 3553A should be given equal weight, but the district court can attribute different weights to each of the factors. In this case, in the district court, there was a psychological evaluation submitted on behalf of Ms. Wheaton, and it was submitted in mitigation of Ms. Wheaton's sentence.
And even though the court didn't specifically refer to the doctor, to Dr. Moran's report by name, she certainly made clear that there were that the psychological issues didn't outweigh the disturbing nature of the crime. She talked about the weaknesses that Wheaton had, you know, acknowledged she wasn't a strong person, could be led astray. These are all things that were in his report.
In the district court, she acknowledged...
Now, these were all conclusions that he made in his report, but she just thought those factors alone weren't enough, especially given the history of Wheaton with the kids. Before the boyfriend.
Well, Your Honor, the psychological evaluation, that was also some of the comments referenced in the sentencing memorandum and argument of counsel in the district court. However, the district court did not specifically address that, you know, Ms. Wheaton has post-traumatic stress disorder, that she has dissociative amnesia, that she has a low IQ, and all of these factors contributed to the offense. She didn't address any of those factors that were made as arguments within the sentencing memorandum and also the arguments of counsel.
But she talked about Wheaton's experience in terms of, you know, the unfortunate sexual abuse and her previous mental problems. And, I mean, she made reference to that. And she talked about... the fact that she was at risk. I mean, I understand she didn't go through everything in the report, but I think there was enough there to support her conclusion.
Well, Your Honor...
Ma'am, did you represent her at this hearing?
Yes, I did, Your Honor.
Is there some reason that you couldn't have asked questions that didn't satisfy you at that time?
Well, Your Honor, I referenced the psychological evaluation in my comments to the district court at the time of sentencing. However, if the burden shifts to counsel to ask the district court every...
If you thought that the court did not adequately answer your question or there was some problem with it, why didn't you raise these issues at that time?
Well, I addressed the psychological evaluation in my argument. However, right. If the burden shifts to counsel to ask the district court every single time, have you considered this? I mean, sentencing hearings would go on forever. And also, I mean, it's the court's burden to consider all the non-frivolous arguments of counsel.
In other words, you think that the court must be that explicit in each and every objection that you make?
The court doesn't have to specifically respond to each argument of counsel, but when the principal argument of counsel was that she had this psychological evaluation and it did mitigate the offense versus the factors and the seriousness of the offense, that it should have been addressed by the district court. And looking at the district court's findings, it appears as though, with all respect to the district court, that she was very, very stuck on the facts of the offense. And she made kind of summary conclusions and summary statements about Ms. Wheaton. You know, she indicated that Ms. Wheaton, her family circumstances, and she made statements regarding Ms. Wheaton's unfortunate sexual abuse as a child. However, she did not factor in her IQ, her diagnoses by Dr. Moran, as to how this could have contributed to the offense. And she failed to articulate reasons about the evaluation and how she was easily influenced based on these shortcomings that Ms. Wheaton has. I would also submit that Ms. Wheaton that this is similar to the Williams case and that Ms. Wheaton was easily manipulated by her co-conspirator, and that should have also been considered by the district court. If you look at the relative culpability of the two defendants in this case, that 3553A requires that the culpability be factored into fashioning the sentence. And considering the district court did not consider all of those factors, that the sentence is procedurally unreasonable. I would also submit that the seriousness of the offense, the district court didn't adequately articulate other reasons under 3553A, that Cunningham and Miranda require that the district court say something about counsel's arguments, and she didn't acknowledge receipt of the evaluation. In her cursory comments in the beginning, she did not indicate that she had received Dr. Moran's report, that she had read Dr. Moran's report, that anything that she had read in Dr. Moran's report factored into her decision in fashioning Ms. Wheaton's sentence.
So you think that is something you didn't need to at least raise? I understand you don't want the sentencing to go on forever, but if you thought that perhaps she hadn't read Dr. Moran's report, since she didn't say that at the beginning, you didn't ask her if she saw it or read it?
No, Your Honor, I did not ask her in the district court. I did not. However, as the current law sits in Villegas-Miranda and Miranda in Cunningham, it requires that the district court, and also this is very similar to Skinner, that the district court has to say something, that they cannot pass over counsel's principal arguments in silence, and she has to say something about the arguments advanced by counsel in the district court. If the court has no further questions, I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Krasinski, Finn.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Laura Shovelinski Finn. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney in Madison, Wisconsin, and I'm representing the United States here today. Judge Crabb sentenced the defendant, Carrie Wheaton, to 30 years in prison. That was a sentence that was the properly calculated guideline sentence, and it was also, in this case, the statutory maximum penalty. That's because Ms. Wheaton chose to plead guilty to one of the four counts that she was charged with. That capped her sentence at 30 years. Otherwise, she was facing a statutory maximum penalty of 120 years in prison. When her guideline range was calculated originally, it was life, very simply life, but she was capped at 30 years. That sentence is presumed reasonable, both under the Supreme Court's precedent and this Court's precedent. The only way to challenge that presumption is the way that the defense is doing it now, and that is to say that Judge Crabb did something wrong in this case. You have to find something wrong. Otherwise, you can't challenge this sentence. And what you can't look at the guideline calculation because everybody agreed that that was correct. So here, the defendant contends that Judge Crabb didn't meaningfully consider her arguments, that she was low-functioning and that low-functioning led to easy manipulation by Roger Smith. However, after one reviews the entire sentencing transcript and all of the facts in this case, that argument quickly falls apart because it's based on a false premise. That false premise is that Judge Crabb didn't consider those arguments. I want to go first to the some of the factors that Ms. Bierma raised, and that is the district court didn't say the words PTSD, didn't say dissociative amnesia, didn't say depression. The problem
and with... And didn't recognize it, didn't even make any reference to the report at all that she reviewed it.
Right. Judge Crabb did not see Dr. Moran's report, but Judge Crabb did review very carefully the conclusions that Dr. Moran made. That was that Ms. Wheaton was not strong, that she was easily influenced, that she was easily led astray, that she was highly dependent on having a man in her life, and Judge Crabb accepted the fact that those factors probably led her to engage in this behavior with Mr. Smith. And then Judge Crabb said, but those are not the only factors. This isn't a case where Judge Crabb ignored Carrie Wheaton. This is a case where Judge Crabb looked directly at Ms. Wheaton and said, because of who you are, because of your characteristics, because of these issues, and because of what you did, yes, what you did, the offense here is important. This woman took her 5-year-old twin daughters, subjected them to the likes of Roger Smith, participated in the sexual abuse. She allowed him to distribute the images on the Internet. She told the police that she enjoyed it, that it aroused her, and she had done it before. Judge Crabb did consider that, and she ought to consider it. She decided that Ms. Wheaton was dangerous, both based on her characteristics set forth in Dr. Moran's report and based on the horrific nature of this offense. Now, the problem with putting a whole lot of weight in Dr. Moran's report is it doesn't say a whole lot of anything in terms of what it means for what kind of sentence Ms. Wheaton should get. And that was a problem in Beyer as well. Ms. Bierma says PTSD, dissociative amnesia, IQ. Judge Crabb didn't explain, you know, why, didn't explain what she thought about those things. Ms. Bierma didn't give her anything to work with. She didn't say because she has a low IQ, that means that if she goes to prison for 10 years, she's going to be better. She didn't say, Dr. Moran said 20 years of treatment is going to make Ms. Wheaton better, and next time she won't do this. Ms. Bierma did say, however, that Wheaton was amenable to treatment and is unlikely to reoffend if treatment is given. There is zero report in the record that that's a true statement. That's Ms. Bierma's opinion. Dr. Moran doesn't say it. There's not a study that says it. There's not an article that says it. There's nothing that says that. And Judge Crabb took that on head on. And she shouldn't have to take a look at this and say, well, I'm going to accept this argument with blind faith. She had nothing to work with. There's no reason that she has to buy that. And she said that in her sentencing comments, that I'm not willing to take that risk. I'm not willing to give a 20-year sentence here because I don't think that's enough. I think the statutory maximum of 30 years is what's necessary and reasonable in this case for this defendant. That's use of discretion. That's not abuse of discretion. And in this case, and in these cases, that is all that's required. She doesn't have to go line by line through Dr. Moran's report. She doesn't have to go line by line through the sentencing memorandum. Judge Crabb was there. She was participating. She understood the case. She understood what was going on, and she understood Ms. Wheaton. And based on all of those things, she decided that 30 years was the sentence that was warranted. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors. To address a few of Ms. Shablinsky-Finn's comments about Dr. Moran's report, Dr. Moran's report does identify that Ms. Wheaton does need intense psychological treatment and she does need continuing care with a psychiatrist. He doesn't offer a specific recommendation of what he thought an appropriate sentence would be. However, he was the psychologist that did conduct the evaluation of her, and he did explain in detail in his report how Ms. Wheaton's manipulation and her susceptibility and vulnerability led to her involvement in the instant offense. And I would submit that we're not talking about substantive reasonableness right now. We're talking about procedural reasonableness. And due to Judge Crabb not even acknowledging that she had received Dr. Moran's report, that she did pass over in silence counsel's principal argument associated with the psychological evaluation, that the sentence should be vacated and remanded to the district court.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The case of the